step three. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood them. So Jennifer, we're excited to hear what you have to say.
Hi, I'm Jennifer. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date, you guys already know this, but for anybody who's new, is May 4th, 1991. My home group is God Calling Friday nights at Kingsley United Methodist Church, 7 o'clock. It's a 11-step meeting. It's a meditation group, very nice, kind of relaxed. Intimate group if you're into, you know, that and not, you know, a big group. Sometimes that's kind of pleasant. So you're all invited to that meeting. Want to kind of quickly review what we've done in the last couple weeks. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And the sanity we're talking about, we discussed last week, is the insanity that precedes the first drink. We don't get perfect in step two, although I thought I would. So we're going to look at step three tonight. And as we run up to step three, the big book says that there are three pertinent ideas that we need to look at. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives, step one. B, that probably no human power could relieve our alcoholism, step one also. And C, that God could and would if he were sought, step two. So we need to be, you know, if we're convinced of those things, then we are at step three. Which, at step three, we decided to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So what is that? What does that mean? You know, what does that mean and what do we do? Well, our will is our thinking. It's my mind. You know, my will is my thinking, which was not too sharp there by the, you know, step three as I approached it many years ago. And my life, this is my action, my behaviors, those followed my thinking, which wasn't too sharp, so the actions not so good either. So here I find myself at step three. And the first requirement of step three is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. And really, for me, all I had to do was really look at my life at that time. You know, I came into step three not drinking, because I had done steps one and two. But still, you know, I was, when I drank, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. You know, sometimes not the worst liar, cheat, and thief, but I had dangerous coping skills that hurt me and other people. I didn't have a good set of principles in my life. I really never had, and any that I had fallen away in the years as I continued to drink. So I came into step three with a totally unmanageable life, but I wasn't drinking. So I thought, you know, I'll try and figure this out on my own. So, I had been doing that for many years. I had been doing what I wanted, the way I wanted, and not paying a lot of attention to who I hurt, because I was desperate. You know, I had no net. I had no spiritual net. I had nothing but, you know, my will. My will was running the show, and my will got me here. So I came to step three, I'm not drinking, I'm thinking I'm doing great, you know, I'm going to meetings, and I'm starting to make decisions based on my old ideas, and they weren't working. you know. Because I was selfish and self-centered, they were never going to work. They hadn't worked when I was drinking, and it was much worse when I was not drinking and trying to run my life on my will, because there was no alcohol to dull the repercussions of my behaviors. There was nowhere to go. I was just stuck with me. So I really, you know, needed a new way. Everything I had done for years was based on me and what I wanted, what I needed, and I was, you know, and what I desperately, you know, grabbed onto. I've made a note here that an old counselor of mine that I went to when I was drinking, of course I didn't tell him I drank, it didn't seem to be relevant. Really, it never came up. Told me that I was narcissistic, and I thought that was a compliment. I wasn't really sure what that meant, you know, but I know now that was not a compliment. So my fine-tuned self-will, you know, run riot coping skills were not working. When I got to step three, and I was scared. I was really scared because I didn't know what to do. And Terry's not here tonight, but we talked about it today. I remember her, because we spent a lot of time together the first year, taking me into social situations, you know, of like out to lunch with people. And I didn't really know how to behave without a drink out dining with other people. I was, you know, I shook the whole first year, and it wasn't because of detoxing. I was just scared. I remember, like, I would get a cup of coffee at the club, and I would be afraid to drink it. I mean, the cup of coffee would sit in front of me for the whole meeting because I was afraid to pick it up, that I would spill it. You know, once in a while, I'd feel like really brave and give it a shot and take a sip. And that's really how it felt. It just felt... And I remember holding on to my chair. I went to every noon meeting at the club, or unless they were at 11 o'clock, and then I went then. But that was how I felt going into step three. And because I was at the club a lot, and because if you've been to the club much, you know that the wall is covered with slogans. You know, live and let live, one day at a time, think. I never got that one. Never understood that one, still don't today, 30 years later. And let go and let God. And that was the one I latched onto in step three. I needed to let go. I couldn't even make a decision to get what to wear in the morning. I needed to have a higher power that I could pray to for the little things and the big things and everything. I didn't know what this power was. We talked about that last week. It was a power of good. I knew that. It was a power that was great enough to remove the obsession to drink. I knew that. But was it one that I could turn my will and my life over to? It had to be, because I couldn't do it anymore. Now, the big book talks about exactly what I was feeling, and I didn't know. It says selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seeming without provocation, but we invariably find, this was me, that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later put us in a position to be hurt. I blamed other people all those years, but I set the ball in motion because I wanted what I wanted, and I would do what I needed to do to get it. And then I'd get hurt, and then I'd blame you. That was my cycle. That's how it went. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. you know, because it was your fault. Until it wasn't. And then I had to get, you know, real. And this is really important, too. And there doesn't seem any way to get rid of self, that self-will. And I was listening to Joe and Charlie talk about this. I don't know if any of you guys ever listened to Joe and Charlie, but they have some interesting things to say about the steps. And they said, you know, this higher power gave us self-will. This higher power is the only thing that can remove it. I can't remove it. I didn't place it in me, you know. And I thought, wow, that's so true. How could I get rid? I tried for years to get rid of that self-will and be a wonderful person. You know, we'll talk more about that on step six, but whoa, I worked hard to be a wonderful person, but I could not get rid of this selfishness and self-centeredness. I needed this. I needed to turn my will, my thoughts, and my life, my actions, over to the care of a power greater than myself. So I made a decision to do that. And here's the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Didn't work. Next, this is all step three, we decided in the hereafter, this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. I always wanted to be an agent. I love being God's agent. It really is what I wanted to grow up to be. I thought I wanted to be a Buddhist monk. I'm still not done, so maybe that'll still happen. But I was like, yeah, okay, I can be God's agent. This might work. So I started praying to this higher power, and as I prayed and moved, you know, with this step, I began to be lighter. And it talks about how that happens. As we felt the new power flow in, we enjoyed peace of mind. We discovered we could face life successfully. I mean, I didn't feel like real successful in step three, but I felt better. You know, I felt better. And that's what I needed, because I was so scared. And I didn't have the skills to live life on life's terms. I had never had them. And that's, you know, why when I picked up a drink at 13 years old, I thought I had found a solution. I didn't really need skills. I had scams. And scams worked for a long time until they didn't. And I hurt a lot of people with those scams, and I hurt myself too. So what we have here, what the book gives us and what Bill gave us, is a prayer. And I brought some for everybody. So that if you're into it, you know, we can say it together. Because at my home group, we can just pass these around. Here,
okay, good. I'll get it. Okay. You want to pass them down?
At my home group, we say this prayer every single week. We say the seven-step prayer also. And I say this prayer every morning when I wake up. And we can say it together. If you're not comfortable saying it, don't even worry about it. You know, you will when you're comfortable. But we can start. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. It says we thought, the book tells me, and it's my experience, you know, that we thought carefully before we took this a big deal step. Jim Nelson used to tell me that. This is a big deal step. Once you do that third step, there's, you know, you can leave here, you can go out and drink for 20 years, but that third step is still in here. You're never going to walk away from this. This is a big deal step. It is the keystone, it says in the book, the keystone of our recovery. And a keystone is a central stone in the summit of an arch that holds the whole thing together. So that's what the third step is, and that's how important it is. But the book says that when we're ready, it's good to say this step with another person. So we all just did together, which was really nice. And we do it in my home group every Friday night. And when I sponsor somebody, I invite them to say the third step prayer with me. And every time they do, you know, I reinforce this message for myself. I love this prayer. I think it's beautiful. It reminds me of so many things every morning. That to relieve me of the bondage of self, I have to ask. I couldn't do it myself. That I may better do God's will. Couldn't do God's will and my will at the same time. You know, just, you know. And to take away my difficulties. I've had difficulties in sobriety. I bet you have too. You know. But why? So, because victory over them will bear witness to other members, to new people, you know. If I can get through this, you can get through this. You know, just trust your higher power. If my higher power can get me through it, yours can get you through it. And I love that message. Because up until then, I really wasn't doing nice things for other people. I didn't even know how. It wasn't really on my mind. To those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. This is a, you know, it's a really powerful message. So here's the kicker, right? Because there's always a kicker. The first three words. Made a decision. Well, about, I don't know, 10 years ago, Jan and I, he's my husband, he's a member, we made a decision to buy a camper so that when we retired, we could travel at will wherever we wanted to go. And, you know, it seemed like a reasonable way to do it. We don't have lots of money, so we couldn't, like, fly to Europe at, you know, drop of a hat or anything. But a camper seemed nice, and he likes nature. I do, too. I'm a hiker. So 10 years ago, we made a decision, you know, we're going to buy a camper. 5 years passed, no camping. Right? Nobody went camping. Okay. So another couple years passed, and we started going to those shows that they have down at the Bayfront Convention Center where they have RVs and stuff, right? And we started looking at them. And then we went out to Ray Wakely's in Northeast, because I graduated from high school with him, went to kindergarten with him, knew him for years and years, talked to Ray, learned something about RVs and campers. Then we started looking at some used RVs and campers, and we came across this wonderful couple in Ohio who the man, they were a little bit older than us, and the gentleman had been a Cleveland City cop, detective, but he was ill, and they didn't think they could manage the camper any longer, so they wanted to sell it. So we went to their house, we took some action. We went to their house, we talked to them, we made them an offer for the camper, we made an agreement on to bring the money and when we would pick it up, and then we showed up to that agreement. You know, we showed up to the agreement, we took the action, and drove the camper home, and now we camp because we have a camper, because we took the action after we made the decision. So what are we going to do here? We can make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. But we have to take the action. So what's the action? Well, the book tells me, next, we launched on a course of vigorous action. And that means that when I make this decision, I'm committing to doing the rest of the steps. That's the action that follows that decision. Otherwise, you know, it's a feel good, but it will not last if it's not followed by the action of continuing the rest of the steps. And that's what I have on step three.
Thank you, Jennifer. So now we have time for questions and answers. So if you're on Zoom and you have a question for our speaker, go ahead and speak up whenever you have the chance. And if you're here in the room, raise your hand and we'll bring you the microphone. Who would like to get us started?
Hello, Jennifer. Helen here.
Hey, Helen. How are you? Good to see you.
When you were reviewing the steps, for some reason I heard you say for step one, we were powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unimaginable.
That, it isn't what I said, but it's cool that you heard it that way.
But anyhow, that's not my question, and I really enjoyed what you had to say. Using your analogy of the decision to buy that camper, but nothing happened until you took action on it, and then you finally got the camper. So my question is, in the third step, after we take this camper, or take this action, when have we finally turned our will and our lives over here, God?
When we take the action of, and the fourth step is an action step. So when we move forward and take the action of the, you know, the rest of the step, put the pen to paper, basically. That's an action.
Okay. But, you know, you went and looked at the camper, you took an action, that didn't mean you had the camper.
No, you have...
Devil's advocate.
No, that's okay, Helen. It really is a decision to continue with the rest of the steps, is really how I would say it. So, you're right. We had to continue with that arrangement with those people. We couldn't just... you know, go pick out the camper and say we'll be back for it. We had to move on and go to the bank and get the money and then drive back and, you know, change the title and all those things. And we have a whole bunch of steps that we had to go through to get the camper. We have a whole bunch of steps that we are making a commitment to when we make that decision and follow through on it.
Okay, one more question, and then is there a step where we have the camper?
We have a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps of that preceded it. So yeah, I think we have the camper on 12. We can go camping on 12. What do you feel? I think. But these are interesting questions. Thanks, Helen.
You froze up on us, Jennifer.
Oh, you're froze. I froze? Okay. Good. She was frozen.
Jim, I'll call you.
Hey, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jennifer. Really, really great night. And so I think this is a kind of a continuation of Helen's question. So when you're, and you kind of mentioned, you know, that you have to continue and put pen to paper. So when you're working with someone, at what point is it, are you satisfied with their decision, with your step three, then it's time for that to put pen to paper?
Could you paraphrase the question back for anybody that...
Jim, I'm going to tell them what you're asking. He wants to know, if I'm working with someone as a sponsor, when am I satisfied that it's time for them to move to step four? And take, because that's an action step, I mean, you know, straight away. And I'm just going to read to you exactly what the book says on that, because that's exactly what I do when I'm sponsoring somebody. What the book says is after we say the prayer of step three, that this is only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made an effect, sometimes a very great one was felt at once. The next word is next. Like there's no interruption. It's like not like next week or... you know, next month we launched on a course of vigorous action. It's next. So when we finish step three, or when the person, you know, we say that prayer and they feel like they're ready to move on, the next day they should be, we should be talking about step four and going over what needs to be done. Next. Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
I'm Deirdre, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Deirdre.
How are you?
I am well. It's nice to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Thank you
so much for what you shared. I have struggled a lot with this stuff, not thinking I would, not really realizing I would. But But my question to you is, and I don't know if this per se applies to you, so I kind of want to frame it in the sense of maybe with some of your sponsees.
Okay.
Have you had people that have made the decision to turn their life well over but taken it back frequently? And in that case, what have you done? Or how would you encourage them? Maybe not even consciously, but have you come across that? And kind of what's your approach in that case?
Okay, Deirdre's asking if when I sponsored anybody or if myself, I have made that decision and then kind of taken it back. I don't think there's anybody that hasn't. I mean, there's degrees of taking it back. There's taking it back and drinking. Then there's taking it back and just using my self-will in a situation because maybe I think I'm brilliant in finance now, and I no longer need a higher power to help me in that area. Thank you very much. So, yeah, I think we all do that to some degree. I think as we move through the rest of the steps, that happens less, or at least it has in my experience. But absolutely and definitely happens with women I sponsor. And again, it's to what degree, you know, and how much damage, how much are we hurting ourselves or somebody else when we do that? You know, I was taught straight up, you know, early in sobriety, we don't hurt people anymore. And so that's a guiding, guiding words for me whenever I'm making a decision on how to take action. I'd love to say I've never hurt anybody since I, you know, was told that and started these steps. I probably have, though. But I try not to. Does that help?
Thank you. It does. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, dear.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hey, Brenda.
Great job tonight. So I'm going to piggyback on what Deirdre was just talking about. Because for me, I did not make that decision for a long time because I felt like if I make that decision and I mess up, you know, and I'm probably going to mess up because I have no confidence in myself that I can do that step and move on. So I kind of understand that that step can hold me back if I'm not willing to turn it over. As time went on, I told myself that I have to do that every day. That I thought I had to do it once, and then we go on to the steps from there. But I have to keep repeating those steps, you know, all the time. Because my humanness will, I'll mess up, you know, and I have to start over. Is that kind of the way that you describe this step too?
Yeah, it is. And that's why I said I say this prayer every morning to remind myself. Because I will take my will back in little, you know, sometimes little subtle ways that aren't hurtful to anybody else, but aren't, you know, enhancing my life in any way either. You know, my husband talks about, he's an old timer, he talks about being spiritually guided rather than emotionally driven. And that when I was talking to him about this step just before I came, I thought this is a good night to talk about that. Because this is where we start to be spiritually guided rather than emotionally driven. Because, you know, what I read from the big book, those self-centered, self-pitying behaviors that I had, those were all emotionally driven. So we begin to be on this step spiritually guided. And that's, for us, vital, I think.
And also, I was just thinking, when I got into some of the steps at the women's retreat,
mm-hmm.
and the chapter came up to into action. Mm-hmm. Now, I'll tell you, it's embarrassing to tell you this, but I didn't know what the hell that meant.
Well, you're telling us all now, Brenda.
Yeah, I know. You know, I did not know what into action meant. And I'll make this quick. Back in the day, a lot of my friends that are probably on Zoom, when they asked a very, very specific question in rehab 20 years ago. They wanted to know, in the Sally, Dick, and Jane books with the dog Spot, they wanted to know what See Spot Run means. And they asked this whole, and one guy raised his hand and said, it means look at the dog run. And I said, that's not it. See, I complicate the simplest of things. It was. It means look at the dog run. I could not figure that out. So when I got to Into Action, like, what action? I thought we're just thinking things.
Right.
So that took some time. Like, you feel so, I felt pretty stupid, but I kept coming around. But I think a lot of our sponsees come through, and they don't want to admit that maybe they feel stupid about some of those things.
Right.
So
I agree. I agree Thanks. With you. And I had, you know, I mean, I read the steps. Every day I went to the club, I read the steps, and I thought, I have no idea what to do with these. You know, I thought maybe 9 I could conquer on my own. But, you know, came to find out I was way off base with that, too. No, it takes time. And they are in order for a reason, as I know you know.
Yeah.
Because one, if I don't do one, I, 2 doesn't mean anything. And, you know, if I don't do 2, I'm not ready to do 3 because I have no belief in a power greater than myself. I have to do 2 before I do 3. And that's why, you know, we started with those 3 pertinent ideas, because I have to be, you know, willing to believe those 3 pertinent ideas are the truth for me as an alcoholic to be able to move on to this step 3.
Thank you, Jen.
That helps.
Thanks.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm Rick.
Hey, Rick.
I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to piggyback off that too, because before she came on and brought that up, exactly what I was going to talk about. And what helps me, I read that third step prayer every day, sometimes more than once, but that's one of the first things I read. And also the 10-step prayer, it's similar.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I need to get out of my self-bondage and all that sometimes, because this is going on. But Into Action, as Brenda was bringing up, I had to read that over and over before, years ago. I mean, I wasn't getting it. And my sponsor tells me today, don't analyze, utilize. And that think on the wall, he told, that's not for me.
Me either. I still don't get it.
And I don't either, but I do enough of that on my own. I don't need a sign telling me to do that. Definitely.
Right? Yeah.
But that's what helps me. And some people, I think, like when I, back in 2008, it was almost a whole year before I did step 4. I think everybody's different. You know, and I'm one, I can make that decision to turn my will over, you know, in our lives over to the care of God, but things happen during the day. I'm a lot better now than it was years ago. I'm going back years ago because things will happen and I forget all about God.
Mm-hmm.
Turning it over, because I was like 40 years out there drinking and stuff, so, you know, that long, it's not going to happen overnight. So I think my sponsors seen that. And other people were coming in the rooms after I did. This was back in 2008, 2009. And they're already working on 4 or 5. I'm starting to get a resentment. I wouldn't say nothing to my sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, it's Todd Beckus.
Oh, okay. Todd, are you listening?
But he knows what he knows. And it worked for me. Not that I didn't want to, but I was getting a resentment. But I wouldn't tell him. I figure he knows what he's doing.
Why would you tell your sponsor?
That's the other thing I wanted to bring up. That's why we have a sponsor to help you work through the steps. I mean, I've known a couple people since I've been coming in the room since way back in 84 that try working the steps themselves. When they get to 4, they stop. They skip and do whatever. And that's really not turning your will and your life over to care of God. But that's beside the point. What I wanted to bring up was, I know you said you go right on to 4. Well, my sponsor said, maybe he will this time. You know, I'll go right into 4 because I didn't forget anything I knew before. I relapsed, see. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see where I'm at.
Well, what would you do in the meantime is what I always ask. So you've done, you know, three as much as you can.
Well, I've misplaced my book. I'm reading 12 and 12. He told me we just got through with one. Now we're going to work on two.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, I'm a slow learner, quick forgetter type thing. Maybe that's why. But I also was busy working a whole lot of hours. Maybe that was part of the problem, too. I don't know. Before. This is now. So I didn't forget anything I learned before or anything I did. And I used to always refer to step one daily, no matter what step I'm working on. But I'm reading the steps we took, the big book, a couple pages a day. And now he told me tonight I'm going to be doing step two in this 12 and 12.
You can't do step two in the 12 and 12. You can't do the steps with the 12 and 12.
I'm supposed to read it, right? Isn't it in
there?
This
is where the instructions for the steps are.
Oh, well, the big book. Why did you tell me to read this?
I don't know. I'll ask him next time I see him. But, I mean, it will enhance.
Right.
It will enhance what you know about this.
Right.
I'm not telling anybody not to read the 12 and 12. I go to a step meeting every single week for 30 years. But you can't do the steps with the 12 and 12 alone.
I'm supposed to read is what I'm doing.
It will enhance your understanding of it.
Right, and then we're going to get together and do one and two together and then, you know, all that.
Don't tell Todd I told you.
No, I'm not. Are you kidding? I got to watch what I say to that guy.
He's probably listening.
He don't sugarcoat anything. Hey, he stayed home tonight. He's always busy. Anyway, that's all I got.
Thanks, Rick.
And thank you for being here tonight and going through these steps each and every week. Appreciate you.
That is good, really good for me, I'll tell you that.
I know. Everything we do, it always seems to help ourselves, too. If it helps another person, then it's a double blessing.
It's true. Thank you. Thanks,
Rick,
for being here.
Who else has a question for Jennifer?
I don't know what the ping was.
It happened as soon as Jack raised his hand.
It did. Maybe it was like, Jack.
Hi, Jennifer, I'm Jack.
Hi, Jack.
Thanks so much.
Thanks.
So, I know some people struggle with the language of the prayers in the big book.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at, personally, I look at thou wilt and thine and bear witness, and it's like, what? If you're working with somebody and they have those same struggles, maybe they want to change the prayer to suit it or make it understandable, how would you deal with that sort of a situation?
Well, I would let them, and the book says that. You know, as long as the same meaning is there, the words, I'm going to even tell you what it says because it directly speaks to that. It says the wording was, of course, quite optional as long as we expressed the idea, voicing it without reservation. So that apparently had come up back in Bill's day, too, because there were, probably were people that were uncomfortable with the language. There was some language I was real uncomfortable with when I came in. And I personally just hated the four absolutes and would not let anybody give me that pamphlet whatsoever because I couldn't do those. But yeah, I've sponsored people who follow Native American spirituality. They have different words that they read the Red Road, which is a 12-step book of recovery, AA recovery. And they use their own language. But as long as it has the same message, that's fine. And that's what I would do with, you know, have it out. Yeah, sure.
Anyone else?
Hi, Jennifer. Bruce, alcoholic.
Hey, Bruce.
May I share with you what I know about Think, Think, Think?
Please.
Okay. That's the question.
Listen up, because we're going to learn about this now.
I went to Willow Run. I kind of was like nursed there. And Buzz Green was, he said, get there early because you to get a seat. And I get there early and nobody would be there but him. And one day I was putting up the signs and I put think, think, think the way I thought I should be. And Buzz got up and walked over and turned it upside down. And I said, why are you putting it upside down? Because that's the meaning when it's upside down. You need to change your thinking.
Oh.
That brown bag says it upside down.
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. So that stuck with me. And I thought, if I didn't share it, shame on me. But I had to ask you if I could.
I love that.
As a question.
Yes. I remember Terry telling me, right when I was really, really new, she would look at me and say, the opposite of everything you think is true. Which is exactly what you're saying. Oh, I really like that. Thanks, Bruce. Perfect.
Now we know.
Anyone else? If no one else has any questions, then thank you very much, Jennifer.